Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Today on the stream, we're going to be focusing on the armed group Boko Haram in Nigeria. Apparently, members of that group are beginning to defect. Earlier, we spoke to Oluyinka Ajala, who had a couple of theories as to why this is happening now.
There are three main reasons why large numbers of Boko Haram fighters are turning themselves in to the Nigerian authorities. The first is the death of Abubakar Shekau, the former leader of the group. Since his death, the current leaders have been unable to forge a new direction, so there is a kind of loss of trust. The Nigerian government have then seized this opportunity to increase the heat on the organization through hiring bombardment and other means. And thirdly, there is an increased belief that if they surrender, they would not be killed or imprisoned a long time without trials.
So that's Oluyinka's take. What is yours? The question we're asking today is, can Boko Haram fighters rejoin Nigerian society? I know you've got a take on this. Pop it into the comment section if you're on YouTube, and I'll do my best to involve your thoughts, your questions for our panelists into today's show. Let's meet your panel. Hello and welcome back, Balama. Hello and welcome back, Bookie. So good to see you. Balama, remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Yeah, Balama Bukerti. I am a senior analyst at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change and a weekly columnist with Daily Trust, a Nigerian newspaper.
Good to have you back. Bookie, remind our audience who you are and what you do.
My name is Bookie Shonibare. I'm the executive director of Invictus Africa, and I'm a human rights advocate.
So, guests, let's be very clear about who are we talking about. Who is defecting from Boko Haram? First of all, let me start with your take, Bookie. Who is leaving? Who is hoping to be reintegrated into Nigerian society? Be specific.
The members of the Boko Haram insurgent group are actually leaving the group for many reasons. And Oluyinka has actually said some of the reasons. Their family members, those who were forcefully conscripted, those who also joined the group voluntarily, are leaving. But particularly also those who are aggrieved as it relates to the modus operandi or the approach with which the group is actually going about achieving its mandate, they are all leaving.
Mm-hmm. Balama, who's leaving? Is it fighters? Is it extended associates? I think that's really important. So when we are asking, can they rejoin society? Who are we asking to be able to get back into Nigerian society? Balama, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think this is an important question, Femi, because the narrative has been these are Boko Haram fighters. But the fact of the matter is that the overwhelming majority of those defecting now and those who defected previously were never fighters in Boko Haram. They were civilians who were swayed by Boko Haram's claim of establishing an Islamic caliphate, and they migrated from their cities and towns in Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, and Chad to the group's territory. And even in Boko Haram's territory today, there are two classes of people. There are those they call Rijal, that is fighters, and there are those they call Awam, that's civilians. And the overwhelming majority of those who are defecting now are those civilians who joined Boko Haram in the hope that they would live in an Islamic state. And that's why there are no weapons, no evidence that they have ever fought. That's not to say there is no small percentage of those who had fought, but most of those defecting are civilians and were never Boko Haram fighters. Mm-hmm.
Bookie, you go first, Bookie. I'm interested about how the Nigerian government are framing these various members or associates of Boko Haram from leaving. But you go first. Your thought first.
No, I was just going to add to what Balama had said. In the eye of the average Nigerian, of the civilian population, there is no dichotomy when you talk about fighters of Boko Haram, even though internally and those who understand the modus operandi of the movement will know there is this difference. But generally, it is understood that so long as you are a member in one way or the other, whether forcefully conscripted or not, you are a fighter, and those people are actually defecting in one way or the other.
So my thought here about the Nigerian government is that they've always said how seriously they take the threat of Boko Haram, how much money they were putting into the effort to defeat them. Is this a government success? Booker, you start.
There's been many attempts, Femi, when it comes to effort at reintegrating members of Boko Haram into the Nigerian society. In 2016, the Nigerian government actually did the Operation Safe Corridor, but it was flawed. You know, Nigerians really complained about the fact that how do you rehabilitate so-called low-risk repentant Boko Haram members? In 2017, there was a DDR, that is Demobilization Dissociation and Reintegration Program, that was done in partnership with IOM, that the Nigerian government also tried to do. But the main concern for the average Nigerian is that how do you differentiate these people? What sort of reintegration program are you doing that does not involve the community? People do not understand. So a lot of this, but most importantly also, is the gendered perspective to the reintegration program. One thing we cannot forget, Femi, is the fact that women are disproportionately affected when in conflict situation. And that disproportionality also must be put into place in the reintegration. In Chibok, when I was going to do project there, I recall a woman who was raped by a member of Boko Haram, and she actually caught HIV. You know, she was ostracized. In one of the IDP camps that I was going to work, they separated the place and called it Sambi. And that is where they relegated people who have had contact with members of Boko Haram. In 2017, UNICEF released a report called Bad Blood, you know, just to explain further how people actually get disproportionately affected. In Afghanistan, looking at what is happening recently, just 2 days ago, a report was released by the newly appointed Taliban leader of the Kabul University that, you know, literally says that women won't be allowed to actually matriculate or work outside. So there has to be gendered perspective in reintegration. And once Nigerians cannot see that, any reintegration program would actually be flawed.
I want to share this with you. Balama, you're very, very familiar with this. On my laptop, Minister says Buhari government trying to make repentant Boko Haram terrorists more civil. This is looking at the Safe Corridor program, which started in 2016. These are some of the, I'm not even sure what to call them. These are some people who were associated with Boko Haram and now are in this program. Can you explain what this program is about, what it's supposed to do? What are we seeing here, for instance?
Sure. I mean, people might want to know that I was the first researcher to access this particular program. And I did a lot of extensive research in this hall that you are showing in the picture. Mm-hmm. And they are called clients in the program. So if you don't know what to call them, you can call them clients. And what this program is supposed to do is to rehabilitate former associates of Boko Haram, whether fighters, people who have lived with them, or anyone that was associated with Boko Haram. And the way they do this is by giving them trauma counseling, vocational training, and numeracy and literacy skills, but also some form of de-radicalization, working with imams and religious clerics to dilute some of their radical religious ideology that took them to the group in the first place.
Does it work? Does it work, Balama? I mean, I'm trying to look at the ages of these former associates with Boko Haram, and they seem to range in age, but they seem quite young. Does this program work?
Many of them are very young. Many of those I interviewed just turned 18 after fighting for Boko Haram for 2 to 3, even 4 years. Whether it works, what I saw in the program and after the program can be called anecdotal evidence that the program does make impact. Mm-hmm. But I can't say scientifically, I can't prove scientifically that it works, but you can see evidence of success. Right. For example, I met boys and, I mean, young men who fought for Boko Haram, now very eager to learn the English language. Some of them were very happy to write their names in my diary to prove that they could now read and write. And, you know, Boko Haram preaches that even speaking English is un-Islamic. It takes one out of Islam. I saw Manchester United and Arsenal supporters in the program. I mean, there were lots of anecdotal evidence that the program is making impact on the clients, but not scientifically prove anything.
So our Al Jazeera correspondent, I hear you sighing, Bookie. I want you to have a listen to this. Our Al Jazeera correspondent, Ahmed Idris, has been in Borno State this past week. We asked him to go out and about and ask people what they felt about reintegrating Boko Haram former members back into Nigerian society. He was in Maiduguri. This is what they told him.
Most of them are not coming out with their weapons. They're just surrendering. So where are their weapons?
I don't think it's right because we're not sure if they've really surrendered and stuff. Maybe, okay, we don't know if it's a plan to come back into the society and, you know, take back.
The ones that are becoming harmless, they are the good ones. And that's why I think they should reintegrate them.
Some of them actually join without their consent, or maybe unwillingly they joined due to one thing or the other. So if they are really ready to surrender, to change, and maybe they will go through process of rehabilitations, like maybe engage in one or two, I think is a good thing.
Okay, I'm hearing empathy there. Is that true of I can't ask you to comment on all of Nigerian society. What is public opinion? What are you getting from public opinion right now in Nigeria about reintegration?
Femi, if the first step to our public opinion goes to the advertisement for this program today, as shared by your Twitter handle today. And I recall seeing one of the responses to it. And you had advertised to say, how should ex-Boko Haram fighters be reintegrated into the society? Mm. And one of the comments, if not the first comment, said, correction, into northern Nigeria. The other comment said, by hanging them. That just gives you an idea of what Nigerians are actually thinking. Yeah. There has to be empathy. One thing we must not forget is that any reintegration program that does not involve the community and that does not put into consideration the pull and the push factors that led a lot of these categories of fighters, like Bulama rightly mentioned earlier, that does not put it into consideration, then we are wasting money. Pull factors such as the fact that there are appealing ideologies, you know, the fact that there are material and social benefits, but also push factors, you know, such as the gains for the relative deprivation or political grievances, the perspective that people have that they are marginalized. If this is not put into consideration, and any reintegration program, Femi, in one of the communities that I was working in the Northeast, they believe that any woman who has had contact with a Boko Haram fighter and gets pregnant, the child of that woman should either be burnt alive or should never be accepted into the community. People are saying is that any reintegration must actually involve justice. And in that justice, we must take a cue from Colombia, you know, and I'll close my thought on that, where they made sure that there was the peace agreement actually formed the basis for which the reintegration program was done, and there was a tearing such that those who engaged in war crimes, according to the Rome Statute, actually faced prosecution, command responsibility in international law, must also be respected. And those who had lesser crimes or did not commit such kind of crimes against humanity can then begin to be reintegrated into the society. How do you expect someone to face the person that shot a gun at their father and just accept them into the society without carrying them along? It is something we must actually ask ourselves.
That theme of justice is picked up by the executive director of the Dini Dari Foundation, where she talks about the cost to the community. We've been talking about Boko Haram associates, members, former fighters, but what about the community who has suffered? Balama, have a listen to Indi and then respond to her video comment.
While some may point to reintegrating repentant terrorists into society as some form of making them, as a form of reverse psychology that makes them want to abandon terrorism and join normal society, the fact remains that Reintegrating terrorists, Boko Haram members, into normal society erodes the concept of justice. It trivializes terrorism. It makes Nigerians feel like, look, there is no justice for this. There is no repercussion for taking part in terrorism. But also, let's look at the pain of the victims of terrorism. So many villages abandoned in Nigeria.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with her sentiment around justice and the question of, I mean, social justice, if you like, to societies. But there are two major issues I want to highlight here. Number one, justice in this case is not straightforward. Under the Nigeria's Western-styled adversarial justice system, you can hardly convict any Boko Haram member, because they destroyed the villages and the witnesses that would have testified against them. And we know that the Nigerian justice system is very weak in gathering evidence, especially if you want the police to do that. And what we have seen over the years is this failure by governments to succeed in convicting any number of Boko Haram fighters. We saw the special courts in Kaenge, where hundreds and hundreds of Boko Haram members were presented. But at the end of the day, very few were convicted. And even those that were convicted in Kaenge were convicted because of a plea bargain they did with government lawyers, where they agreed to plead to lesser crimes like being mechanics for Boko Haram or serving as bakers for Boko Haram instead of being charged as fighters. And so they received sentences that were 3 to 5 years or so. And that was because government has no evidence. And under Nigeria's justice system, we need proof beyond reasonable doubt before you can convict any of these people. And that's simply not on the ground. And I tell you this as a lawyer who has been involved in some of these cases, including defending soldiers that were charged with failure to fight Boko Haram or people that were unfairly accused of Boko Haram. But the second point is very important, which is around this program being community-centered. As we speak today, the lives and livelihoods of people destroyed by Boko Haram is still not rebuilt. Villages, hundreds and hundreds of villages are still deserted. There are still 3 million people that are displaced. Governments have not rebuilt their lives and livelihoods, but governments are rebuilding Boko Haram's life, taking them back to the same communities they destroyed. Okay. It won't work that way. Mm-hmm. You have got to, there are several things one needs to do. I don't want to, overspeak now, but I would come back with 5 things government needs to do we want this program to succeed.
I'm going to get your top 2, but not quite yet, because on YouTube, this is the question that is being asked. What happens, or what's happened, to the victims of Boko Haram? Buki, can you just do that briefly? You've been telling us these stories, weaving them all the way for our discussion anyway. But to that simple question, what would you reply?
You know, the question is what happens to victims of Boko Haram. The effect on them cannot be overemphasized, from the education of young girls that can no longer go to school, who are, even though schools are open, are literally afraid to go to school, women who have been sexually abused, men who have been forcefully conscripted, communities that have been shattered. I recall going to the Bama IDP camp, and it was one of those early times when they opened the IDP camp. And I literally saw children with ribs literally, you know, popping out simply because they are hungry. And I think this is what Nigerians are trying to get to. If you're doing the integration program, and the money that is being spent on the integration program is much more than the money that is being spent in ensuring that the victims of Boko Haram actually get the kind of support they need, actually get the kind of psychological, economical, financial support that they need, then such kind of reintegration program is not sensitive to the needs of the people. Any reintegration that does not balance that is actually problematic. And this is not just about saying that we are rebuilding schools or reopening schools. This is actually rebuilding lives. And rebuilding lives involves everything, social, economical, political, all of those developments that either were ignored and led to all of these problems that we are talking about in the first place, or that would actually make their lives better. There are so many young women that are still in abduction today. over 199 Chibok girls are still in abduction. Leah Sharibu is still in abduction. Alice Ngada is still in abduction. These are the names and the faces that we know. How about the much more than that we don't know? So why would we want to be spending that much on reintegration when Nigerians cannot really see?
I want to show you this program. All right, I hear what you're saying. It's very clear. But I want to show you this program. So this is Ahmed Idris. I told you he was in Borno State earlier on, just a few days ago. And he was filming a program that is aimed at the kids of Boko Haram. OK? Here's his story.
Born and raised in Boko Haram camps, these children are experiencing for the first time what it means to be a child. They're part of the 6,000 victims and family members of Boko Haram fighters who've surrendered to Nigerian security forces in the past few months. After a few weeks of psychological support, those helping them are surprised by the rapid transformation they see.
You see a lot of them coming into the safe space looking very distressed, looking angry. But after weeks of engagement, or because we engage them for 3 months sometimes, depending on how we see their vulnerability and all of that, so we, after the engagement, you see a lot of changes. You see them interacting better. You see them taking leadership roles. You see them doing so much better.
So that's one program, A Future for Youngsters After Boko Haram. Here is Fola, who is suggesting a to-do list for improving these programs for Boko Haram. Let's have a look.
I believe a very effective and safe way to reintegrate ex-Boko Haram fighters into Nigerian society is to consider three critical factors. The first factor is to ensure a risk assessment for individual ex-Boko Haram fighters over a generalized approach. The second factor is the important role of communities that have been affected by the activities of these ex-Boko Haram fighters. In other words, a community-based approach is critical to ensuring the success of a reintegration program. And then the third factor, which is very often missing, is the need for a gendered perspective, one that considers also the role of women and girls, which has been largely missing in Nigeria's current Operation Safe Corridor.
It's almost as if he's been listening in to the program, but he did that before we started our show. Buki and Balama. Balama, you said you had five critical things. I'm going to get your top two for starters, right? How do we reform the reform programs for Boko Haram?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is to make them community-centered. I wouldn't call it even community-based, community-centered. And sure. When I say community-centered, this program has to carry the communities along from the very beginning.
All right, point number two, because I want to share this with Buki and we're at the very end of the show. Point number two.
Okay, point number two is attaining some level of peace and stability, because as we speak, Boko Haram is not past tense. As we speak, by Nigerian government's report and the UN, today 170 children have died because of Boko Haram, and another 170 die tomorrow. And that's what continues, according to the UN and the Nigerian government, and that led to over 400,000 dead, mostly of children below the age of five. So it is still going on, and you can't reintegration
mature
when the group is still active.
All right, Buki, final thought here. You've been weaving your thoughts all the way through. I understand what you're saying about it's got to be community-based, justice. Anything more to add? I hear that message loud and clear.
Justice.
Justice.
Rwanda, but most importantly, a reintegration program that is gender-sensitive, that put into consideration the disproportionate effect of conflict on women and that involves them in the entire process of reintegration.
Mm-hmm. Buki Shonabari, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Balama Bukati. Always good to have you on the stream. You give us such insight into some of the difficulties happening in Nigerian society. Let me show you where to find them on Twitter. Buki is here and this is Balama. And thank you for your questions. Thank you for your attention. I will see you next time. Take care, everybody. Thanks for watching the stream.